You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast on distinguishing and managing early stage Alzheimer's disease, leveraging interdisciplinary collaboration for prompt identification and optimal patient management. My name is Brad Dickerson. I'm director of the Massachusetts General Hospital Frontotemporal Disorders Unit and a professor of neurology at the Harvard Medical School. Joining me is my friend and colleague, Dr. Alireza Atri. Dr. Atri, glad to have you on the call today. Please tell our listeners a little about yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Dickerson. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you. I'm a cognitive neurologist. I'm the chief medical officer for Banner Research, overseeing the Alzheimer's Institutes and Research Institutes, and I direct the Banner Sound Health Research Institute in Sun City, Arizona. I take care of patients and families with Alzheimer's and related disorders, particularly young individuals, and I'm involved in research and things like that.
Wonderful. Well, why don't we take our listeners through a couple of cases today that you and I can discuss? So first, let's meet Jake. He's a 65-year-old Caucasian American man who's a retired police sergeant referred by his primary care doctor to you as a neurologist. Gradually increasing memory difficulty over the past 2 years. He often doesn't seem to remember common words, uses vague words when speaking, sometimes doesn't even seem to understand what others are saying to him. For example, his wife was asking what he wanted for dinner one night and gave him some choices. And he said, "What is a steak?" when she offered a steak to him. He's begun going for long walks most every day and was recently found miles away from his house on a very cold day without a coat and was near hypothermia. He's involved in his church. He plays tennis regularly, and his wife prompted the visit. His past medical history is significant for hypertension, hyperlipidemia, both well-controlled obstructive sleep apnea that so far has not been treated. His meds include lisinopril, atenolol, and atorvastatin. Family history is negative for any neuropsychiatric conditions or neurologic conditions or dementia. Social history, he's been married for 50 years, retired for 7 years, socially active, physically sedentary, drinks 2 beers a night, former smoker, and has a normal initial lab panel that his PCP got to evaluate for common comorbid conditions that may affect cognition. So with that background, Ali, what stands out to you at this point before we go on to the exam?
Well, I'm certainly concerned because there are clear changes here that are being reported. And, while there's a difficulty here being attributed to sort of memory, but it seems like, communication and language and maybe both understanding of language is being compromised also. It sounds like in a few situations, safety's been involved. He's got some risk factors, but he's kind of young, right? So he's 65 and sounds like symptoms have been going on for a couple of years. So this is sort of on the spectrum of, early onset cognitive impairment and change. There's some other risk factors here. I do wonder actually, he's young, he retired young, whether there's been any issues that were related to him having to retire earlier, whether he was having symptoms earlier than that. As I mentioned, some cerebrovascular risk factors. The drinking, I really want to find out if it's really 2 beers a night or more. If they're forgetful, they may be drinking a little bit more than that. And it sounds like, he's had some, cognitive lab panel that assesses things that are very common that can change in individuals who are older that can be mitigated. And none of those issues are involved. So I'd like to know a little bit more about, the pattern and have some more objective testing maybe and reporting regarding his symptoms and maybe signs, both from the mental status and behavioral exam and the physical exam.
Great. So that's what was done next. And so he and his wife both were given some validated symptom surveys, one of which was the Quick Dementia Rating System. And he said there was nothing wrong, so endorsed all zeros on the Quick Dementia, on the QDRS. His wife, though, endorsed a one in language, which was the domain that had the biggest change, a 0.5 in problem solving, a 0.5 in activities outside the home, and a 0.5 in function in the home. So a total score of 2.5. On the neuropsychiatric inventory questionnaire, his wife endorsed mild disinhibition and mild change in eating behavior, which on the interview she reported was some unusual food preferences. And on the functional activities questionnaire, he is no longer able to remember appointments on his own, but otherwise normal, so got a score of 1. Physical exam was unremarkable. Neurologic exam was largely unremarkable. He had a bright affect, was socially engaging, very talkative, denied mood concerns, but was maybe a little mildly disinhibited, asked the doctor when his birthday was. And then on the mini mental state exam, he got a 25 because he couldn't remember the 3 words and he couldn't name the 2 objects. So I wonder what your thoughts are about that before we talk about neuropsych assessment and MRI.
Yeah, I think this is really important because now we have some, we've kind of probed changes and trajectory and maybe level of changes in the in cognitive domains. How it's affecting his daily life, which it sounds like overall is not being affected in a tremendous amount. He does have some lack of awareness regarding his changes, it sounds like. So that's a concern that we can talk about for safety and other things. And then, mood and neuropsychiatric, that's really important. It sounds like, I'm getting a little bit of a frontal temporal feeling here with, some of the networks with disinhibition and maybe changes in food preferences. Sounds like, motor and sensory motor and gait generally is okay. And that score, I want to always look for patterns in these things. And it sounds like at least on an MMSC, he had difficulty with verbal memory. Is that really memory or is that the verbal aspects of it? And then not being able to name the objects, that's concerning. So those are all I want to take those objective things and map them onto some of the subjective changes that maybe in the QDRS his wife was complaining about, whether it was mostly language or memory or both. But this is somebody who, now at this point, I'm really concerned about these being real changes. I've got some objective potential evidence, and I want to take it to the next step of thinking about delineating sort of the pattern of changes. So this is probably somewhere in the mild cognitive impairment range. I need a little bit more information about that. But I don't think it's subjective cognitive change. I don't think it's normal aging. I want to start thinking about a little bit of etiology and contributing factors, including potentially, sleep, alcohol, and other things like that. And so I'd want to get some imaging done. And certainly, I think neuropsychological evaluation would be important here.
Great. So that's what was done. And he was found on the neuropsychological assessment to have high average premorbid intelligence and above average performance on tests in the domains of attention, visual memory, executive function, and visual spatial function. He did have impaired verbal memory encoding and retrieval, but normal recognition. And he had substantial language impairment, as you were suggesting from the history, where he was more than 3 standard deviations below normal in naming and also was substantially impaired in verbal fluency.
You don't always get everything at the same time. So, if this is the information that came to me, now we have pretty objective evidence, right, that there are impairments in multiple cognitive domains, and it's memory plus, right? So the question really becomes, was language impaired first and primarily, and it's affecting, aspects of memory function secondarily or not? It sounds like visual memory was intact. Executive functioning and visual spatial cognition were intact. That probably this difficulty with naming, verbal fluency, is probably affecting language networks and other things that are infecting some aspects of verbal memory also. So I think my hypothesis here is, as far as a syndrome, that this is, I've tried to refine it with his wife again, but I'm thinking this isn't just your typical amnestic flavor, that this is really potentially a language variant, kind of a primary progressive aphasia variant. And, with his difficulty with coming up with words, potentially being confused about what they are, I'm thinking about, left temporal, left perisylvian areas, left parietal, and then, so I'm concerned about that. And certainly MRI would be something that is ordered, I'd like to know. So that would be my hypothesis. And then to see how much a white matter change he may have.
Yeah, well, it turned out he did, on his MRI, he really had just a couple of ditzels of tiny white matter signal abnormalities with no real periventricular or deep white matter signal abnormalities to speak of, which might be a little surprising given his vascular risk factors. But he did have, as you predicted, left temporal pole, very focal left temporal pole atrophy as the main issue that extended into the hippocampus a little bit, but the right hippocampus was fine, the right temporal pole was fine, and the rest of the brain was really very full without evidence of atrophy.
Yeah, so here again, I think we're, obviously this was the first MRI. Maybe we didn't have a baseline to compare it to, but I think, having this asymmetry of the left temporal pole, I think, did you mention perisylvian areas also?
Not so much, just the temporal pole extending into the ventromedial temporal cortex, not too far back, but involving the anterior portion of the hippocampus a little bit as well.
Okay, which again kind of explains some of this, his difficulties here with language and with naming and with fluency. And was he having a substantial amount of difficulty knowing the meanings of words on neuropsych testing? I forgot to ask that.
Yeah, he did. He when they did the naming test, he for the items that he couldn't name, like I said, he was like more than three standard deviations below normal. And for the items that he couldn't name, they gave phonemic cues. And most of those he couldn't get with the phonemic cue. And so they gave the semantic cue. And some of those he was able to get, but some of those, even with the semantic cue, he didn't seem to know what the object was.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, oftentimes you think about the semantic variant of BPA. Sometimes when people show up to you, they're not exactly falling in one category versus the other. I find that, our textbooks, we like to always... say, well, this is a logopenic variant, and this is a semantic variant. Sometimes you can have mixed, variants, in the logopenic variant where it's oftentimes more associated with sort of AD changes. People have trouble thinking of the word they want to say, over time have more pauses. They have difficulty with repetition. But generally they have, intact word meaning, right? And it sounds like he's, and I wonder if he had any of the latter, whether this is a mixed, logopenic semantic, or whether this is sort of more falling in the semantic. Because again, these sort of patterns tell us prior test probabilities of what the underlying etiologies may be. But I'm still, in a young person like this, I still wouldn't rule out AD. Versus other types of, tauopathies.
So what additional testing would you want to get in terms of some of the subspecialty imaging or other tests that could be obtained at this point?
Yeah, I think additional testing is going to be really important to kind of delineate the underlying, pathobiology of this. We already know that he's got evidence of neurodegeneration from the MRI. I think an FDG PET would be something that sometimes is in these cases I would consider. He's 65. If he's on Medicare, that's something. If you're thinking a frontal syndrome. You mentioned that he was maybe there was a little element of disinhibition. So that's got to be in the differential diagnosis. And of course, I think AD is in differential diagnosis. So to go for an actual highest confidence diagnosis about etiology in this case, I think with amyloid PET or CSF biomarkers being covered, I would have a discussion with them. But ultimately, I think I would want to know if this is AD or not. And if it's a stepwise approach, you could go for the FDG PET, but I'd also discuss with them about having a amyloid PET scan or CSF biomarkers in this case to actually look to see if this is AD or not.
Yeah. So let's say you got both. And as you said, if a person's a Medicare beneficiary, it should be perfectly reasonable and reimbursed to get FDG PET and amyloid PET. So he had an FDG PET that showed a focal anterior temporal lobe pattern of hypometabolism on the left without involvement of the posterior cingulate precuneus medial parietal structures or lateral temporal parietal structures, and a negative amyloid PET scan. So what are your thoughts about the underlying etiology with that information, Dr. Autry?
Yeah, I think, again, the syndrome here and now the neurodegenerative pattern on the FDG PET are all sort of mapping together, this being really a language variant, a semantic variant type of a primary progressive aphasia that's non-AD, and that's in the FTLD sort of degeneration, frontotemporal lobar degeneration sort of spectrum. He's got the progressive loss of, meanings of words. Generally, that's affecting other aspects of his language. And but sounds like, for the most part, memory's intact. And so this is, it kind of makes sense also with some of the slight behavioral changes that were going on with him earlier. So sort of MCI level, potentially plus level of impairment, semantic variant PPA, FTLD as being etiology, but not AD. So this person needs a lot of counseling and I think management also.
Great. So we have a precision medicine diagnosis in this case. This person is not a candidate for amyloid lowering therapy since he doesn't have amyloid and he has a FTLD diagnosis. Can you just touch in just a few seconds maybe on some bullet points for management?
Yeah, for management, I mean, certainly, I think a lot of psychosocial education and support for the patient, the family, the patient themselves is not really aware. So safety concerns and future planning and monitoring is going to be really important. Could be a candidate for speech and language therapy to help him some, I think. And then a number of different medications potentially for symptom management for him, would be important. And of course, referral to Alzheimer's Association, also a consideration of clinical trials for FTLD.
Great. Well, that was an excellent introductory case, Ali. Why don't we touch on a second case? Just briefly, in the time we have left, this is a 70-year-old man with a gradual cognitive decline, about 2 years' worth, who is a college graduate. He has hypertension, hyperlipidemia. He's got sleep difficulty and mild depression that came on after his cognitive symptoms. So he's on escitalopram, hydrochlorothiazide, atorvastatin, and diphenhydramine. His symptoms are impacting his life in the sense that he is needing help with managing his medications. He used to do the family finances, but his wife is basically starting to take that over because he's been making mistakes and taking longer than he used to. And he's really having difficulty retaining information, including plans they're making, and asks her multiple times and has trouble figuring out how to do some tasks around the house that he used to be able to do routinely. On his examination, he's got a normal general physical exam. His neurologic exam is normal, but he scored a 20 out of 30 on the Montreal Cognitive Assessment because he had difficulties with executive function, attention, on serial sevens, a delayed recall. He could encode the information but couldn't recall it and had trouble with recognizing it and retrieving it with cues, and also was not fully oriented in time. What strikes you about the presentation of this second case?
Yeah, this one's very concerning. Also, I think he's got the risk factors between age, a family history, about the right time. There's major concerns that are being voiced and changes from both his wife and himself, and you know, regarding you know, aspects of cognitive function, including memory, executive function, that are impacting actually activities of daily living. So in this case, not normal cognition, not subjective cognitive decline. The MoCA score, I think, is objective evidence also, you know, between the symptoms and the cognitive domains. So this is a, you know, amnestic, probably multi-domain, you know, mild dementia syndrome that is, you know, would be concerning for him, both for Alzheimer's disease because of the pattern, but also vascular changes. He's got the, you know, cerebrovascular risk factors. And the other thing I will be looking at are his medications. So while he's probably had his, you know, the history of mood and maybe a bit of apathy, that diphenhydramine is anticholinergic and is probably also suppressing cognitive function. So I need to, you know, look at etiology a little bit more and contributing factors and parse them out. But I think my hypothesis would be that this is potentially, you know, AD and or mixed vascular with the contribution of potentially medications also suppressing his cognitive function, but the drivers being neurodegenerative.
Great. So he had a cognitive lab panel for common comorbid conditions. It was all unrevealing, all within normal limits. And his MRI scan showed ventricular enlargement, cortical atrophy, and also patchy periventricular white matter hyperintensities, probably at a physicus 1 level, so relatively mild but present. And also we had a small left caudate lacunar infarct that was chronic. So what are your thoughts now and what would you do next?
Yeah, I think it sounds like there's evidence of neurodegeneration, some vascular sort of ischemic brain injury, you know, between the infarct and at least, you know, sort of mild, you know, changes on the MRI. So there's probably, you know, N and I, I'm sorry, N and V are covered there. But I'd like to know what the driver here is and, you know, whether this is, you know, Alzheimer's, he has Alzheimer's pathology also driving this. Because that's going to potentially still affect my management and counseling for him. I certainly advise, you know, going off the diphenhydramine. So I'd like to take it to the next step and do some testing to see if he has elements of Alzheimer's disease that we can, you know, objectively confirm.
Great. So he's got the neurodegeneration and the vascular, but you want to know if he has amyloid and presumably tau. So in this case, he didn't really want a lumbar puncture. So he got an amyloid PET scan, which came back diffusely positive.
Yeah, that is consistent with the hypothesis we had that there's probably the driver of this is Alzheimer's disease. So in this case, we have somebody who has multi-domain amnestic mild dementia due to Alzheimer's disease. And which is, you know, now confirmed and biologically confirmed. And so we would have, you know, really good patient-centered discussions regarding psychoeducation, about options, care planning. And in this case, FDA treatments that are available to them, including cholinesterase inhibitors, plaque-lowering monoclonals, and, you know, sort of the risk and benefits and burdens and potential costs and, you know, what's at stake, you know, and also, you know, referral to social work, Alzheimer's Association, and also consideration of clinical trials, I think would all be on the table with someone like him. But now we have a definitive molecular diagnosis.
Well, thank you so much for going through that case, Ali. I think that's all the time we have. And again, I'd like to thank Dr. Alireza Atri for taking the time to speak today about these scenarios surrounding early diagnosis and management of MCI and dementia. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. We hope you will listen to another episode from this series. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. In support of improving patient care, Med Learning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And I'd like to give a special thank you to our supporter, Lily, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity. Thank you and have a great day.